Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Diversity Riley.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm giving you that honor.
Wow, I feel very special, like very honored.
You should. And Spencer, always want to fight Williams.
Oh, do not bring in what happened before the show into this. That is not fair.
We got a great show in store because we are joined by a good friend of ours, Miss Laura Siracule, who happens to be a Asian American journalist down in SoCal who writes a ton of stuff, and we just had to have her on the show this week.
Laura, BFFs with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my goodness.
My boyfriend.
Laura, it's good to have you back. How you doing?
Hi, guys. It's very good. It's so good to talk to you. Talk to you guys again. It's been forever.
It has. And we're excited because we're going to be getting into the film Crazy Rich Asians. So before we do, Chad's going to give him a little bit of info.
Yep. With a bank account that cannot provide first-class seats on an international flight, The Filmlosophers are brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Anytime you're looking for a new way to invest your valuable time, we've surely got a movie review to interest you. Subscribe to The Filmlosophers so you won't miss our new episodes each Wednesday. We're available on your favorite streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, where else can they find us?
Everyone's living their best life online, and we're no different. Make sure you're keeping up with the Joneses, or at least the Filmlosophers, by liking our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. If you're crazy rich, don't worry, we have no intention of hitting you up for money, because our podcast is totally free. Visit our website at filmlosophers.com to listen in on our library of more than 100 episodes. And let us know if you'd like to send some lunch money our way, after all.
That's right.
I mean, we will accept donations.
We're not opposed to receiving money at all. We're not even opposed to begging a little bit, because we just did right there.
Please, 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 please. We want to eat.
So this has been a film that's been of some topic for some time now. I believe the film's been out for already a few weeks. And this movie has been just creating conversation everywhere around the world. I mean, just to be honest. And I just think having the opportunity to talk about it today is a great joy, especially with the opportunity of bringing in Laura on the show and having her talk about it with us, because knowing Laura personally, I know she has a lot of strong opinions, especially about the Asian American culture and representation, proper representation in the industry. So we're going to dive right into our review of Crazy Rich Asians. Chad, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
I'd love to. Crazy Rich Asians follows New Yorker Rachel Chu as she accompanies her longtime boyfriend Nick Young to his best friend's wedding in Singapore. Excited about visiting Asia for the first time, but nervous about meeting Nick's family, Rachel is unprepared to learn that Nick has neglected to mention a few key details about his life. Not only is he the scion of one of the country's wealthiest families, but also one of its most sought-after bachelors. Being on Nick's arm puts a target on Rachel's back with jealous socialites, and worse, Nick's own disapproving mother taking aim. It soon becomes clear that the only thing crazier than love is family, and this funny and romantic story sure to ring true for audiences everywhere.
Aww.
That sounded like an advertisement.
Hey, you know.
What kind of words did you put into my mouth?
The kind that
I was
sells
not paid to
film.
Promote.
Do we need to talk about last week?
What was that, Laura?
I was like, that's really great. Only $19.99.
Exactly. I sounded like an infomercial, didn't I?
Directed by John M. Chu, the film stars Constant Wu, Henry Golding, Michelle Yao, Gemma Chan, Lisa Liu, Awkwafina, Ken Jeong, and Nico Santos. The film is actually based on the novel of the same name, so it actually hails from a book adaptation. The novel is the first part of a trilogy by Kevin Kwan, The second book in the trilogy is known as China Rich Girlfriend, and the third is Rich People Problems. And yes,
and Eddie is in the process of reading them all.
I actually am. No joke. I was telling Chad, I just found out, well, I had heard, but I didn't really look into it, that there's actually a book series, or there's an, this is adapted from an actual novel. And so, I think it was yesterday? Might have been yesterday or Sunday.
Yeah, you started reading it? Yeah, yeah. A day or two ago.
I got it on Audible. I'm like, 11 hours, I can knock that out. Sure.
He didn't sleep a wink.
I am on chapter 27.
Of course you are.
Out of 57 chapters. So.
Oh, wait, which book?
The first book.
Okay.
I'm still going through the first book. I'll get through all of them. Don't worry. But to kind of redirect back to the film, this is a very unique film where one of the key takeaways for most people when they come into seeing it is they recognize that the film, first off, has a lot of recognizable Asian actors. I mean, you have Constance Wu, who has been just knocking it out of the park in the ABC TV series Fresh Off the Boat. It's really funny, and I think
she is the reason to watch that show.
Oh, 100%.
She's amazing.
She is. You got a chance to meet her, didn't you, Laura?
Yeah. I had met her a few years ago at a book event for Eddie Huang.
Yeah.
And I've seen her at other events too, other Asian group events. But yeah, she's been really nice, and she's very she's just been really nice and just ready to take on Hollywood for Asians. She's always been the advocate.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that you recognize with this particular film. It really seems like a film that is trying to do the Asian American representation in films proper, which in all honesty, we haven't really seen that done well in the past 40, 50 years since Breakfast at Tiffany's. That whole thing.
I mean, I don't think that was
that. No, it was
40 or 50 years ago.
Well, it was about 40 years ago, wasn't it? 60s. Either way,
I guess.
There's even current whitewashing too. There's even current whitewashing, like with Doctor Strange and and also Ghost in the Shell.
Yes, yes, which we've actually had other writer and critic Val, who came on the show to talk about that one last time. One of the things that really we wanted to kind of start this thing off with is expectations. Now, there's a difference in terms of like the expectations that every single person has. As myself, somebody who enjoys certain films, like some of these romantic films I actually enjoy, my expectations were somewhere around there. I was hoping to see a really good romantic film, fun rom-com kind of thing. But you can't negate the importance of that representation. You can't negate what is happening in the film that could actually begin maybe a trend of newer things to happen in cinema, in Hollywood altogether. So on top of recognizing that I was hoping it was going to be a good romantic comedy, just to kind of be honest, this is a type of film that you don't normally see in terms of an all-Asian cast being done out here, actually in America, representing the community out here properly. From my perspective, from me, like seeing a great Hispanic film, seeing a great film that has a huge Latin cast that actually portrays them properly is something that I have yet to see, and that's something that I hope to see one day. And this is one of those types of films where this is actually ringing true for people who have been wanting to see something like this for so long.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but I think the director, John M. Chu, knew that he had to do it right, and that's why he really worked hard to make sure it was an all-Asian cast. Like, he scoured the world to find actors for all the parts, and Henry Golding, who is a completely new guy, like, this is his first major film, and he's already on posters. And he already has two other movies coming out too. This is his first gig. He was a host for the Discovery Channel and the Travel Channels. But then they had him audition because they found him on Instagram. an accountant at the company was like, I think you should audition this guy. And he has been a host. He was very charming and just very so charming, so charismatic that he came in, he auditioned, and he was Nick Young. And, you know, John really worked so hard to make sure he has a binder full of Asians actors. I know, I just think of a joke like that. But like, but yeah, he has a binder of like a whole bunch of Asian actors. And now I feel like for the next sequel, it's been approved for a sequel. I feel like he's going to make sure that he keeps it that way.
Yeah. Spence. Now, when we talked about this film, when we were going to go watch it, you were kind of half and half in terms of wondering if you were going to actually enjoy it or not. What were some of the expectations you were having prior to going into the film? Like, what was going through your mind?
All right. Yeah, Spencer, what was going through your mind?
Okay, so there's like two things I was thinking about. Like, I was thinking, like, you know, for Asian people, this is probably going to be like their Black Panther of the year, except, you know, based on reality. No. Okay. And the other thing is, I'm not really into rom-coms, so I wasn't really sure if I'd find that enjoyable at all. So it was kind of just that.
So you're ultimately saying that the film was kind of already going two negatives against it. Already had two negatives in terms of
two negatives. One's a positive.
Oh, one was a positive.
There was only one negative for Spencer.
Oh, one. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just usually
the rom com angle.
It's usually Spencer.
Not his jam.
So you're not a fan of rom coms.
Not really.
Oh, we're gonna have to change that.
I, on the other hand, am a fan of rom coms. I grew up in a household that was mostly dominated by female energy, and so we had a lot of rom-coms over the years, a lot of Julia Roberts films, Sandra Bullock films, you know, whatnot. And it's interesting because when I saw previews for this film, I mean, obviously it is very noticeable from the first teaser trailer or whatever, you know, the all-Asian cast, or all-Asian-American, Asian, you know, various backgrounds of Asian, because it is very much one of the things that surprised me was how most of the characters that you're following are speaking with either American or British accented, you know, English. And I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting a little bit more immersive, I guess, of an environment, because you are in Singapore. You are not in either London or New York or anywhere else in those, you know, westernized societies. So I was surprised that the inflections and everything, it was far more familiar, I think, to me than I expected for it to be. But I was excited about the rom-com aspect because aside from a few young adult films, they don't really do rom-coms anymore. It's kind of a hibernating genre. Let's call it hibernating, because I don't think it's dead. It's just like you either skew very like saccharine romantic, or it's a young adult movie that happens to be a romantic thing. But yeah, the mature adult rom-com is pretty rare right now.
No, and I 100% agree with that, because like you, I grew up in a household whom my mom loved rom-com. So like, anything from, you know, like you said, Julia Roberts, Sandra Bullock, anything with Minnie Driver, anything that led into Meg Ryan. I mean, any of those types of films, they were watched in the house, and, you know, it was a part of kind of growing up. You know, if we had a free afternoon during the summer, we would throw on, you know, You've Got Mail or something like that, and we'd enjoy it. That was part of the norm there. So I think that's an interesting note that you mentioned about how it's hibernating. I didn't really think about it until you mentioned it, but it's true, because if you look at the romantic comedy genre, it's continuing to dwindle and dwindle and dwindle in terms of the offerings that come up from that particular genre. We haven't really had a solid rom-com since, I'm trying to think of something that doesn't have Vince Vaughn in it or something ridiculous, you know, but
I mean, you kind of had like the rom-com kind of gave way in many instances to the raunch-com, where you had, like, you know, your Cameron Diaz, Jason Segel pairing, and, you know, your Friends with Benefits and all that, you know, just like it's meant to be, I guess, sort of a romantic comedy, but it's just much less light and innocent feeling, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain angle to the storytelling that's edgier and doesn't quite fit the same mold. But here it's really delightful
mm-hmm.
to have, you know, a film like Crazy Rich Asians, because obviously the title alone is compelling. I'm like, okay, what does that look like? Like, what kinds of clothes do they wear? Cars do they drive? Jewelry do they have? Places do they go? Where do they live? Like, all of that kind of stuff. Like, what does it mean to be crazy rich, you know, in Asia?
Yeah.
And I didn't know before going to the movie that it was set in Singapore, which, I mean, I personally think you hear about Singapore all the time. The way that, you know, just how wealthy overall it is per capita as a nation, the way that the cities are laid out, the way that, like, you've seen photos of the architecture before. So it was really cool to see it brought to life on film in terms of, like, the aerial flyovers, to kind of show in living color in motion, you know, what some of these, some of the locales look like.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Again, I was just surprised that the speaking characters were all English speaking and were like the English was either British or American English. I wasn't expecting that.
Take your part. It's you could say Westernized Asians, because regarding people who are British Asian, Australian Asian, Asian American,
mm-hmm.
we call them Westernized Asians. So we could group them as Asians who were just from the Western countries. And so we've been calling them that because this is all Westernized cast and in an Asian American production. And the reason why that they all have British accents in Singapore is because they were sent to boarding schools. The rich people, they send their to boarding schools that's in Singapore taught by British people.
Hmm.
And also, I think, Eddie, you heard it in the book, right?
Yeah.
So they went
they mentioned how the majority of the kids, there was a protocol in terms of like how they would send their children off. So they would have their children being raised by the grandmother, and then at a certain point they would be sent off to boarding school, usually to, like Laura said, to a boarding school that was led by British educators or actually in London or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And until they would graduate, then they would go usually to a university, usually in London or elsewhere. And so I think that's kind of where that's brought in from. But I do think it doesn't get enough mentions to recognize it in the film. I think that's a really good point that you bring up.
Yeah, I mean, they mentioned it a few times, about going to school and stuff like that. But it's not like the main focus, I think. And it's also, I think many Asian people know this. Like, people of Asian descent typically know this kind of thing. So I think that's why they briefly mentioned things. What I love about the film is that they cater it to you guys, really, too. Like, they cater it to us. Like, this film was for us. But they also cater it to you for definitions and teaching you how to do things, except the Mahjong scene. Because I feel like people who don't know Mahjong would not know what was going on. But
yeah.
I feel like the whole banana thing, like she said, you're white and you're a banana. And then she explained it, white mm-hmm. on the inside, yellow on the outside. And like she was like a whole bunch of scenes. There were a lot of explanations and a lot of Asian people just know it by heart. Like, okay, this is why they did that. But I like how they had to explain it to you guys. Like the whole Singapore where Awkwafina's character, Pek Lin, had to show the map. Like rich China came over to Singapore, you know, and all that stuff. Like they really showed it for the audience who would not know.
Yeah, actually, I have to admit, I didn't know any of that stuff until she pulled out the purse and started giving us a geography / history lesson. I'm like, I'm learning history and geography from Awkwafina. Okay. But speaking of Awkwafina, that kind of leads us into like some of the characters that are in this film. We mentioned the main character, Rachel Chu, played by Constance Wu. Sorry. Whom we've already stated how just great Constance Wu is and a lot of the projects that she's done. You had Nick Young, who played her boyfriend, played by Henry Golding, who was one of the individuals who had the English accent that Chad was mentioning. Among others, you had Astrid, who was played by Gemma Chan. Lisa Liu was in it as well. We mentioned Awkwafina. We get some appearances by Ken Jeong, who plays the father of
Awkwafina's character. Yeah. Picklin.
And then you have the mother, Eleanor Young, who's played by the incredible Michelle Yao. Mm-hmm. What was that?
Yeah, my queen.
Which Michelle Yao has been in the industry for a long time now. And not to say that she's, you know, reaching some kind of retirement age. I'm just saying she has been in Hollywood for a while. And this is one of those roles where I think it kind of contrasts the book in some ways, because in the book, she's a little bit more like, I don't know if you've read it, Laura, but in the book, she seems more of like a Hispanic mom. Like in my mind, I'm listening to her and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my grandma. Like that's the way my mom and my grandma are. Like she's like, ah, oh, you're gonna catch a cold. You need to eat. Make sure you're always eating. Walk into the door. She's like, oh, you're so thin. You need to eat. You need to eat something. Go into the kitchen. Grab yourself something. And that's literally just whenever I visit my grandma. That's why since I've kind of cut back on visiting my grandma, I've lost weight. But no, but that is completely different from how Michelle Yao plays the particular character, which in this one, it's a more kind of dignified role. She seems more like, it's like a quiet strength that's really echoed in this particular role. I don't know, what did you guys think, Chad?
In terms of her portrayal, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how to compare it. I mean, I took her to be very imperious and domineering in a quiet way, you know, sort of the head that turns the neck sort of a way, but not so much with a spouse as, you know, with her own children. I thought that her introduction as a character was fantastic. I mean, yes. She is a total baller. You do not mess with this woman.
Yeah.
The way that she's introduced, it's not too spoilery. It's in the past when both of her children are young and they go to a hotel in London and they're supposed to have a reservation, and the service staff at the hotel refuse to let them into their rooms, and it's pouring down rain outside, they're tracking mud in, it's just a deluge. And so she says, well, you know, then let me use your phone to contact my husband because he's the one that made the arrangements. And they make her go outside with her family out into the rain to one of the, you know, iconic red phone booths of London. She comes back inside. The owner of the hotel comes down and basically is like, do whatever you need to do for these people because they now own this hotel.
Yeah.
Like, there is no bigger mic drop moment that you're ever going to see than, oh, you're not going to let me into my room? I will buy this place out from under you, and now I am your boss in the span of 5 minutes.
That is such like one of those types of like dream sequence moments you have whenever you're ever in a situation where you're like, oh, you're full, you can't give me a table in this restaurant. If I could just buy this place, you'd be so gone. Like, I've had those thoughts. I don't know about you guys, but I've had those thoughts where I'm like either somewhere going somewhere, or there's no room at the hotels, or there's no place to eat at the restaurants, or there's no room in the movie theater or whatever. And I'm just like, I will buy you out if I get rich. and it's a really solid and awesome way that how they introduce her, because I do agree, it's incredible how it's that quiet strength, the one that we were talking about, that imperious kind of quiet strength that she really exudes. And I'm glad in all honesty that they made this switch from the character that's in the book to this, because this particular role, this particular type of portrayal in the film suits her much more, like suits Michelle Yao, than if it was like a very much the way the book portrays her.
Like more like a coddling kind of mother hen sort of.
Yeah, she's very much like, oh, you don't call no more. You should call more. Oh, or like she's very conniving in an outward expressive way rather than like an introverted type of, you know, conniving. She's like trying to pull information out of family members and stuff. It's ridiculous.
I'm glad that they took that away. And plus, Michelle Yeoh actually refused to do it that way too. Yeoh said, I won't play this character if she's not a tiger mom and if she isn't like portrayed as a villain, because she said that, you know, I want to be commanding, but also I want people to know I'm doing this because I love my son. And so they really worked, her and John worked out together to figure out how they were going to play this character. And so Michelle, that's why you see so many changes. And that's also why you don't see her husband there as well, because in the book, the husband's kind of he kind of tells her not what to do because she's still the head of the household. But he kind of is the one who kind of convinced her to be good, be better. And so they want her to be better on her own.
Yeah. And that was, yeah, it's true, because you there's no dad in the picture in terms of in the film. I don't.
He's always referenced and never seen.
That's right. He's always either he's out of town or he's away or he's out of the room, something to that effect. And it's true in the book that the father is kind of the patriarch type. You know, he tells the wife where to go, what to do, and how to do it. And I think that was a really interesting and smart change for this particular film, because with everything going on with the, you know, obviously the Me Too movement and everything else with, you know, women kind of stepping into a more empowering role, jumping into a film where one of your main characters is kind of pulled around by her husband as part of the role in the book, I don't know how well that would have been received in theaters. In my mind, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Spence. Oh, no, go ahead, Laura.
Oh, no, and as you were saying, like, she has two children. Actually, Astrid is her niece. Astrid and Nick are cousins. And it doesn't really clear it up in the beginning, because you see the auntie with them. The auntie that was with them in the beginning in London is Astrid's mother.
Oh, I thought she was a nanny.
Oh,
I thought it was a nanny, like the kid's nanny.
See, and
I mean, she gave a good stink eye too.
Yeah, no one's allowed to talk. If you had a nanny, you're not allowed to talk like that, really. That's her sister-in-law. Like, that's the lady with her.
Yeah.
Her brother is Philip, the husband of Michelle Yeoh's character, Eleanor.
Ah, okay, that clears that up then. Okay, that makes sense.
So that's why, like, that's why you see Astrid in her own world. You don't see you don't see Eleanor focused on her, because Nick is her only child.
Oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense. So, all right, okay. Now, Spence, was there any standout character for you that you thought, you know, was really great or really did an awesome job in the film?
No, it was Michelle Yeoh, because, like, the second I saw her, I was just instantly just so happy. I didn't know she was in this movie at all.
Mm.
Because the first time I ran into her was Star Trek Discovery, and she did an amazing job in, like, just two episodes. I was like, why is it not about her? And so I was so glad to have more of her in my life, really.
More of her in your life. And like I said, Michelle Yeoh is one of those types of individuals who's been in the business for a while. Mm-hmm. She has done so many different things, not only just for American cinema, but also Asian cinema as well. She's been in several films, countless films, and has been kind of a symbol of that crossover, making it, you know, not only in Asian cinema, but also in American cinema without compromising or without removing any of the things that make her, you know. You think of obviously one of her, you know, outstanding performances in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great film, and she was phenomenal, you know, in every point of that particular film. And that film just kind of opened the eyes of a lot of people to see what this type of performer can do and how she can really just blossom in more roles other than what she could be typecasted. Another standout role that was kind of the comedic relief of the film, if you will, was Awkwafina. If you're not familiar with Awkwafina, Awkwafina was also one of the thieves, if you will, in Ocean's 8, which debuted this year as well. She plays the college friend of Constant Wu's character. Peck Lin was a friend when they were in university, and then she moved back home.
Oh yeah, she went back home after because she was a student, so she was on a student visa.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about her character role, I have to say, it was funny. A lot of the things she did in this particular film, I thought she added a lot of moments where you could breathe in between, you know, the romantic parts and the more serious parts. She allowed some of those moments to really have space. What did you think of her, Chad?
I liked her better in this than Ocean's 8.
Mm-hmm. True.
I thought that anytime you have, just structurally speaking, this is a romantic comedy. I would say there might be a few other substreams of genre that you might attach, but like primarily the flow of the story is a romantic comedy. So it's already a comedic, mostly yeah. comedic take. So then you have a character, one of a few characters, who is primarily there as comic relief. Also, she has that role as the explainer, which is helpful. But you don't want to overdo the comic relief within a comedy film. Mm-hmm. And you've got some other characters that are also providing comic relief in this same film, some who are members of her family. So to be used effectively but sparingly, I think was a wise choice. And again, I enjoyed her more in this than I did in Ocean's 8.
What did you think, Spence?
No, same. Like, in this one, I thought she did a really great job of just being, like, on-time comical because she has some really great lines throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think the fact that she was used not in excess was a big plus because, let's just be honest, her type of character, and she does do similar characters. This is one of those particular individuals whom you don't hire her for how well she fits the role. You hire her for how well she can be herself in the role, in all honesty, in my mind. And I think a lot of her particular humor and comedic timing and moments were especially special to her. But I think this is the type of performer whom, if there's too much of her throughout the entire film, it can get a little, you know, straining on the focus aspect of the audience, because then she can get a little annoying.
Yeah, well, she's one of those performers that kind of pulls the attention toward her, which as a performer, that's fantastic to be able to own a scene in your own way. That's a phenomenal talent. But as a supporting character and not one of the main characters, by a long shot, it would be, you know, it would be a bad play to have her pulling too much focus toward herself when the story is actually about other people in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. She was amazing, though. Like, she was hilarious in everything she did do. Like, that she stole every scene that she was the focus on. And then her pairing with Nico Santos' character, Oliver, like, they were just, like, a great duo when they were doing the costume changes for Rachel, when they were hanging out together, when they first meet at grandma's house, Amma's house. They really had a lot of chemistry too. And so it's like, it's cool to see they weren't used for a laugh. They weren't like, you didn't laugh at them, you laughed with them. And that's one of my biggest fear of Asians in movies, that I don't want people to laugh at them, because usually we're typically the joke and stereotypically. But in this movie, it's like, they're just funny. They're just funny people, and that you laugh with them. And so this is why it's another plus for me to have those two in the movie as the comic reliefs.
And I think you hit on a really important kind of mindset, because you look at films and you look at other particular films and you look at comedic actors and you're like, oh, he's funny, they're funny, that's they're funny for just that particular reason. But then if you look at, take my culture for instance, like you look at somebody like classic Mexican performers like Cantinflas, or individuals who spent their time making themselves the comedic joke or the humoristic point of a film or whatnot. The idea of that particular character being in the film was so that you had somebody to point and laugh at, and it obviously was good. It had its moments, but it's not giving the character his due diligence. I mean, obviously he's there for comedic relief. He's there to be the butt of a joke, but there's a time where you kind of want them to also have their moment in the sun, be an actor, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you do need, you know, it is one of those balancing acts, which, yeah, you know, if you're telling primarily a comedic story, so that it's not like people are not likely to die or, you know, go to war or whatever in a romantic comedy. There are some exclusions or exceptions to that rule, but when everything is generally lighthearted, you don't want your main characters to be the more clownish ones. So you've got to insert characters that are a little bit more cartoonish and clownish so that your main characters feel more normal.
Yeah.
And there are numerous characters in this story that behave in clownish ways. These two are not even the only ones. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That bazooka. And the quote unquote actress with her Amy Winehouse hair.
Kitty Pong.
Yeah, all of that mess. There's a lot going on in some of these scenes.
So what I love about this is that, yeah, there are the Alistair and Eddie who are like douchebags. And then there's Bernie Tai, who is a major douchebag. But what I love is that it's an all Asian cast. And it's usually, if it's just only Jimmy O Yang playing that one character among white people, then that's the representative for Asians. Mm-hmm. Because this is an all Asian cast, we could have a variety of people. Because it doesn't matter if we have that one Bernie Tai, because we have Nick Young, we have Colin Koo, we have Araminta, we have so many different characters that can represent different parts of us, that if you gave me two Bernie Tais, I'm okay, because it's not the only representative for us. Everyone in there is like a different aspect of a different Asian person. And so that's why I'm like, I'm not too worried, but with Awkwafina and Oliver, because they're a supporting cast, I was like, I don't want to make fun of them, but make fun of Eddie, Alistair. You can make fun of because we just have such a variety. It's like an all Asian cast, so we have our choices. Like I get to say like, hey, if I was a kid and this movie came out and I'm like, hey, let's play Crazy Rich Asians, I'm going to be Rachel. Okay, you could be Araminta. You know, it's we have choices, versus when I played Power Rangers, I only had one choice.
Yeah. Yep. You were always the Red Ranger. We know. And I think that's an interesting, like Chad put, it's a very interesting balancing act you have to have, because You don't want to make people feel like they're being laughed at. You want that mindset of being, you know, laughing with. You know, you create the opportunities where you're laughing with the character. And I think that, going back to Awkwafina, I think the way they utilized her and the way they framed her and portrayed her in this particular film allowed her to be funny but not be the butt of a joke. And mm-hmm. and as insane as her outfits looked, and having like,
I for real thought she was wearing pajamas in most of her scenes, like very very expensive nice pajamas.
They look like
they were.
Okay, good. Yeah. I read that right.
Wait, were they not pajamas?
# fashionista.
Oh, no, they were. They were. Stella McCarthy. The first one was Stella McCarthy pajamas, and the next ones were like just, I don't remember.
She knows the brand. Somebody has been Googling this. Somebody's been checking it online.
I'm just saying, did I look for it so I could cosplay? Maybe.
Perhaps. Will we judge you? Absolutely not.
And like Chad had mentioned, like we've stated, this film is a romantic comedy, so it does have that overall arc of a romantic comedy. Obviously, you have two people who are in love, go into a situation tests the relationship may seem on rocks, get to a place where relationship, love overcomes all kind of mindset. That's the general idea of any romantic comedy. The great thing about this particular film is how well it incorporates the mindset of the Asian culture and the Asian family dynamic, if you will, and how sometimes family really plays heavily in how you choose to move forward with your love life. I mean, plain and simple, some families have stronger dynamics and they cause more of those types of decisions to be lent upon by what the family thinks. And in other situations, there's like, yeah, I don't have any family, don't worry about it kind of thing. And I think this film does a really great job of kind of showcasing both of those dynamics in terms of like a family where the mother trusts the child so much and knows that they're going to make right decisions. And then you have the family where it's like, no, you have to think about the family. You have to think about our name. You have to think about where we move forward to and this and that. And I have to say, for a romantic comedy, I think that's a really great way to structure a story in terms of something as general as the genre of romantic comedy, in my mind.
Yeah, I think that this film really, and I, again, haven't read the book, so I don't know how much it parallels or diverges from the book, but I think the film has a pretty heavy charge in front of it, in terms of not only satisfying, you know, people like me who grew up watching romantic comedies, and so you want to have something that's, you know, familiar enough in terms of the genre play, like the way the story flows, you know, hopefully they end up together, who knows. The mahjong scene that Laura was talking about earlier was a really terrific turning point, climactic, you know, kind of like quiet, calm showdown with some really great messages,
mm-hmm.
all overtly and subtextually presented through the scene. And, you know, so you've got that crowd that's looking for the romantic comedy aspect of it.
Yeah.
But you also have, like we've been talking about the whole time, the representation aspect and showing a variety of people. And personality types and quirkiness and, you know, responsibility and different types of relationships even. I mean, there are quite a few different relational dynamics at play here, just in terms of, you know, male-female couples in the movie, let alone generational relationships between parents or, you know, the relationship between a mother-in-law and her daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
And, you know, just all this stuff, the aunties and all the friends, alleged friends. You know, so there are a lot of elements all working in concert in this story, that it had to have been difficult to make decisions on, you know, what elements to include and what elements to leave out in order to make sure that at the end, you know, your audience has an overall fulfilling, a sense of fulfillment by the end of the story. Because yeah. You're not going to show all of, you know, the luxury cultural mindset. You're not going to show all of, you know, this sort of pan-Asian, you know, demographic mindset. You're not going to show all of the romantic comedy experience with all the peaks and valleys. You know, you've got 2 hours or less.
Yeah.
You know, to pick and choose. I think overall they did make some pretty good choices, you know,
completely
start to finish.
And I agree 100% on that. I think this is the type of film where, so here's the first thing that comes to mind. It's adapted from a book. So you think of that and you're like, oh, they're going to be missing all this stuff. They're going to be not, you know, doing all this and that. There's this favorite part of mine that they're not going to put in the book because it's just too long and to explain it.
Or like a whole character that's deleted or, yeah, exactly. It always happens.
Yeah.
And mind you, you know what? That's knowing how films are and how adaptations work. You kind of come to expect it. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just you have to recognize how adaptations work and how not everything can fit in the film. That's fine. But in this particular film, I thought they did a really great job of incorporating not everything, but the important parts. Like the making sure that the important parts made it in, which was the focus of, you know, understanding family dynamics, understanding the love aspect, not only, like you were saying, not only just between the man and the woman, but also within, you know, familial relationships, the love between, you know, a son and a mother, the love between a grandmother and a son and a grandson, the love between cousins, even the love between cousins, you know, and recognizing like community in there and showing how just sometimes certain family dynamics can be uplifting and some of them can be toxic. And I think one of the great things about this film is that that's something that I think everybody, or at least most people, can relate to. I mean, everybody has that particular aspect of their family that's like, you know, yeah, we don't go around there anymore because they're just so negative, or they're toxic, or they, you know, they just pry and they whatnot. And, you know, people have that, and recognizing it and being able to put it in a way where you can represent it on screen without it being just so specifically like, oh, this is only how this is. This is there. The situations that you're watching on in the film, this is only because they're Asian, or this is only because they're Chinese. These problems that they're having, oh, this is just an Asian thing. No, I was looking at it, like I said earlier, I was watching the film and I'm like, dude, I have family who does that every day. I avoid phone calls from people like that because I know what they want to hear. I know
it's true. I've seen him avoid phone calls.
It's true. And I think the great thing about this film is it represents it so well, even though you have an all Asian or Asian American or westernized Asian cast in the film, you can still connect with some aspect of what these individuals are going through, even if it's from a familial situation to a relationship situation, or even just a, you know, the dynamic of being somewhere you're not comfortable being. You know, there's several aspects in this film that you can definitely latch onto and say, yeah, that's me, or I've been there, kind of thing. Well, I don't know, what do you think, Spence?
Yes, I avoid people too when they're
Brilliant.
No, I could definitely see a lot of my own family. It was actually interesting how relatable it was, because, you know, most of my family lives over here and not in Singapore. So I was like, oh, this is
like, really? I never would have guessed.
So I'm like, oh, this is pretty awesome. I feel like I can, you know, really follow along with it.
Well, for the great thing about the movie is that they had this writer named Pete Chiarelli. He's written for John Chu's movies before, and he's written a few rom-coms like The Proposal and a few others. And so what he did was he wrote the first draft, and he made it universal. Like he created a basic formula of mother-in-law everything, and then they brought in Adele Lim, who grew up in Malaysia. She's an Asian American writer. And she's from Malaysia, and she kind of grew up around that society. So she kind of, they worked together to kind of, she kind of formed it to what it is today and added the Asian aspects to it. So it has the central story of a romantic comedy that everyone can universally relate to. And then it adds some extra aspects of the Asian culture, and also things, the choices that Asian people would make and the reason why. So they really fleshed out this this script together. And you know, it's funny, they never met, but they did everything through email and just communicating about the script. And so that's what you see. It's all because, you know, they made sure it was universal, but then they smooth it out to make sure they added the Asian aspects that many of us can relate to. And the thing is, like, I'm so glad you guys see the romantic aspect of it, and also the theme of family. And I think it's an added bonus. An added bonus of that was also something that I feel like Asian Americans can relate to, or Westernized Asians can relate to. It's an Asian American going to Asia and not feeling welcomed. And yeah. It's what many, like, I feel like a lot of people who parents are immigrants from, who are part of the diaspora of their country, different countries, that you, like the mom did a little code switching in the beginning where when they went shopping, when Rachel Chu's mom and her went shopping and talking about meeting Nick's parents, and she said to her in Chinese, like, you look like them, you sound like them. But in here, and then she switched to English, you're different. And so not many people understand that there's a difference between Asians and Asian Americans, and that an Asian American going to Asia, they won't automatically fit in. And I just got into a Twitter argument with someone about this whole thing about Asians and Asian Americans are not the same. And this movie, I'm hoping people will see it and they will realize, oh my God, like, I see why, like, she had a difficult time. Like, my brother, he's Asian too. Like, he didn't get it. He was just like, I don't get it. She's Asian American. She's going to Asia. She should be fine. And I'm like, no, when we go to Asia, we don't fit in immediately. And so when he watched it, he was like, I get it. I completely get this movie. And he's a banana. So it's like, it was really great. Like, he's a real banana. And the fact that he watched it and he was like, you know, I never really thought about this, you know, but, you know, I really get it. And it's really great that they're showcasing this. Yeah. And so I'm really happy that they didn't switch Rachel to be a white girl. And it's obvious that she wouldn't understand the culture. Yeah. But by making her Asian American, it allows us to feel seen as Asian Americans and Westernized Asians to feel seen that when we go to Asia, it's not the same. And also for other non-Asians to see that we're not the same and that we won't automatically click. And so the fact that they had that in the story, it meant so much to me. And also the family dynamics, like the one thing that got me emotional was when Grandma and Astrid walked down the aisle and Astrid was emotional. I don't want to talk about why because it's spoilery, but she was emotional. And she said, thank you, Amma. Thank you, Grandma. And she said, and the grandma said, family doesn't say thank you. Family never says thank you. And it's that small thing where, you know, like, I feel like in American culture, it's like, you have to say thank you. You have to say thank you, like, to no matter what. And it's true. You should say thank you. It's the proper. But in the Chinese and Asian culture, it's like, your grandma gives you something, you thank them, but they're like, it's because I love you and you're my family. And so it hit me close to home, especially since I lost my grandma last in December. And this movie, I've seen it 7 times and I cried every single time I've seen it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's so many aspects to this movie that, like, it's a romantic comedy and it's amazing romantic and you feel lovey-dovey feelings. And then you also feel empowered with the woman empowerment and, like, Astrid telling off her husband. That was the best part for me. And also, and then you see family stuff and the Asian American experience. And so this movie, I know everyone's like, oh, it's a rom-com. I'm like, yeah, it's a rom-com in general. But I feel like for a lot of Asian Americans and Westernized Asians, it's just, it's our life.
Yeah.
For some of us. I'm not going to say it's for all Asians. It's for a small, like, mainly East and Southeast Asians who can relate to this. Because there is some drama and controversy about that, but that's a different podcast to talk about.
That's for a different show. But it's interesting that you say that, because I think even more so, I think that's one of the aspects that even, like, myself, I can relate to, especially when you were talking about, like, the whole going to Singapore, going back to Asia or visiting Asia and you know, not feeling like you belong, because, you know, as a Hispanic person, you were saying, you mentioned the word banana, and they do mention that word in the film in terms of referencing Westernized Asians, and how, you know, they, just the way that whole statement goes, how they explain it, for Hispanic people, there's actually a word for people, for Hispanics or Latinos who are on this side of the border, who've grown up as Americans and try to go visit back in Mexico, and it's called being a pocho. A pocho is ultimately a Hispanic or Latino individual who tries to go back to Mexico and doesn't really speak that much Spanish, which, raising my hand here, don't even say. And so but there's a word for it. There's an actual word for it. And going back, it's difficult to consider going to visit and things like that because of how you feel like you can belong in that and how you feel like you can be a part of that. And I think this film does a really great job of expressing that, not only just to the Asian culture, but I think that has a deeper meaning too, even just for any minority, anybody in that in that aspect who has a place where they call, you know, the homeland or wherever your roots lie, you know, and not being able to really feel like you can go back and visit because of the fact that you are from a certain part of the world. And, you know, that's unfortunately the world we live in currently because, you know, like I said, for Hispanics, that's something that happens every day. Like, there are people who use that term even on this side, and they're over here. And I'm like, I can't be a pocho because you're on this side of the border too. But it's an interesting observation of that film. And I think that's one of the unique standouts for in terms of recognizing what all this film does, because like we stated, this is a rom-com. This is marketed as a romantic comedy, but it does so much more on other levels for different people who see it. What do you think, Spence?
You talked about a lot right there. So what specifically?
Let me jump in here for a quick second, because I think the other thing that was really interesting is, you know, in terms of the universal themes, right? One of the things that kind of struck me, there were a couple of moments in the first half of the film where Rachel is specifically in Singapore. She's specifically singled out as an American. And, you know, like the mother-in-law says, that's a very American way to think, you know, or whatever. And, you know, you can imagine, like, in terms of the universal themes, like not feeling fully at home where you are, not feeling like you fully belong in the whatever state you find yourself in. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, you know, perhaps here in America, you know, if I'm a person of color of any delineation, you know, I don't feel at home here because there are antagonistic elements in the society within which I'm living. But then if I'm to go to a place where, let's say, just very superficially, people generally look more like me, and I would think that I would feel more accepted there, but then I'm singled out because I'm from America, you know, then you kind of end up with this, like, well, then where is my place?
Yeah.
Sort of mentality. And I felt like they didn't really, you know, overly lean into that. But I think just in terms of, like, the ebbs and flows of life, and any individual person, regardless of your background, your family situation, the society that you're in or whatever, most people do go through multiple phases of, I don't really feel like I belong anywhere. And I have to rediscover or re-articulate where I might belong, and maybe learn an entire new way of belonging in the first place. And you know, so I think that in terms of the universal themes in the story, that definitely could be one of them. Just, you know, I was surprised by how bold-faced some of the characters were about saying, well, you're American, so you couldn't possibly fit in here.
Yeah. So back to Spence. Have you formulated your thought yet?
Like, I get that whole, like, you know, feeling like homeless in, like, I don't really have a place to belong. Like, because for me, you know, America can be kind of not welcoming to, well, all minorities, really. But, like, you know, as a black person, like, I have problems where they're like, you know, Negro, go home. But they said something a lot more offensive than that. And then, you know, there's been, like, you know, Africans, like people from Africa who are like, sure, you know, why are you called African American? You're just American. Like, you know, so it's not like I feel like I'm not wanted here and I'm not wanted there. So it's like I can kind of identify with, like, you know, Rachel's whole, like, thing of, like, you know, being Asian but, like, not being their kind of Asian. Like, I can, I feel like I get.
You're somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like that limbo space for the culture that you're in. So this particular film, obviously, like we said, there's a lot of different things that this particular film does. And as Laura mentioned, there's actually a sequel already being greenlit for the film, which should be interesting, because I haven't even seen the synopsis of the second book, so I have no idea where this is going to go. But I have to ask a question, and I want to pose this to you, Laura, because you are a resident expert in this particular area concerning this film. Does this film help or hinder in terms of representing the proper westernized Asian representation in film, in your opinion? Because I know we've talked, you and I have talked offline, and we actually had a conversation yesterday in regards to another film, and I know you have really strong opinions, and you're a very big advocate for seeing proper representation. How do you feel this film stands up to that?
So I know, I don't remember if it was Spencer or Chad, because I can't see you guys and it's all voices. But you guys, one of you guys said it was the Black Panther for Asians, but it, like, I always tell people, like, it's not our Black Panther, because with Black Panther, it's empowerment of all Blacks and African American people. And for this film, for Crazy Rich Asians, obviously it doesn't represent all Asians, because there's so many different Asians that weren't depicted in this. And also it showcases a store, like it showcases a higher economic level of Asians, because we do in real life, we actually have one of the higher poverty lines. But in general, this movie is a good start for it's great representation, but it's a good start for more stories to be told. I don't think it's the hear all say all of Asian films. And it shouldn't have to be, because it's a romantic comedy. It's not one of those thoughtful pieces where it makes you think about society, Asian society, of westernized society, because it's based in Singapore. But it does feature a lot of Asian, westernized Asians. And I feel like this movie itself isn't representative of what westernized Asians are or what Asians are. Because it's just, it's so broad. But I feel like for what it is, it's a great representation of showcasing Asians and Asian actors, because, you know, for so long, we've been told that we're not expressive enough. We've been told I can't find any actors. I can't find any casting. Like, we wanted an Asian, but we couldn't find any actors. And this kind of movie is great representation of showcasing that, look, we made you cry during this movie. This whole cast is Asian, and we made you laugh, we made you cry, we made you feel things. And so we are proving ourselves as Asians in Hollywood and in media that we can do this, and we could tell more stories, and we can act. And so with Crazy Rich Asians, everyone's like, oh, it's our movie. It is our movie. It's our moment. I don't want people to put so much pressure on it, because it's a romantic comedy. It's not telling a story of Vincent Chin, who everyone should Google. It's not like the Fruitvale Station, where they tell a story that actually happened. So what I always tell people, I'm like, watch Crazy Rich Asians, enjoy it, get the feeling of feeling represented, and then also see what we can do. And I'm excited for the China Rich Girlfriend and Rich People Problems, because it's going to show more stories. And I feel like also this movie is propelling other Asian stories to be told, and kind of showcasing, hey, we can act, we have great stories, we are box office hits, you know, we like bok bok bitch, you know.
Exactly. So as we round out this conversation, obviously, like we said, there's going to be a sequel to this, and we're going to be keeping our eye out for that. Was there any other last thoughts on the film before we kind of round out the review, Spencer?
No, I think we've covered all the really important parts.
Chad?
No, I would just point out for the class, so to speak, that the film had a budget somewhere in the $30 million range and has made over 70. So, and that's after only 2 weeks, and that's North American box office numbers only. So it has more than made back its budget. More than doubled its budget, in fact, I believe. I think it was $35 million, and it's a little over 70. So it has just more than doubled its budget. So that's not too shabby at all.
What about you, Laura? Any last thoughts before we round out this review?
Yeah, I want everyone to know that it's a great movie, not only because it's a good love story, it's for Asian identity, but it also showcases female empowerment, femininity. They change the story so the females can be more empowered. And it also showcases sexy Asian men who are typically like demasculated and in the previous films. And now we see tons of really hot, sexy Asian men, which has been like, they exist. They've been existed for a long time. And it's great to showcase that, you know, look at these sexy Asian men and not fetishize women. Let's look at the guys.
There you go.
Laura, I think it's safe to say that only you could make that point on this podcast.
I'm so glad we had you on because that somebody had to say that, and I'm glad it was you.
I mean,
you.
It's not that we weren't all feeling it.
No, I'm just saying. So with that...
Ladies listening to this, or the boyfriends, husbands, whatever, like, just trust me. See yourself... this movie. This is a really great movie overall, but also eye candy for both of you, but mainly women and gay men.
All right. Well, with that said, we're going to go around the table and talk about does the film pass or fail and how many monocles. And we'll go ahead and start with Chad.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I would say it passes for sure. I enjoyed myself immensely the whole time. That first scene, that tells you everything you need to know. I was like, dang, how rich are these people? Like, she literally bought the hotel because they wouldn't give her room. Like, I'm like, that's a whole other echelon of influence. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was very well balanced, I thought, in terms of the flow of the story. I liked the characters. I liked the variety of personalities on display. I felt like I learned things that I didn't know before. And that was exciting too. I would say overall, I would give it 4 out of 5. I would knock it down 1 because it unexpectedly also made me weep. Although not in a way that anybody would anticipate. There's a beautiful wedding sequence about 2/3 of the way through the movie. It's not the main characters. It's other characters that you've been sort of preparing for their wedding the whole time. And the song that is being sung during the wedding sequence is an Elvis song, Can't Help Falling in Love. And Laura, my grandmother, also passed unexpectedly in November. And that was the song that we played at her celebration of life to sort of kick things off. So whenever I hear it, you know, my eyes kind of mist up. And I was completely caught unawares with this movie because it's a gorgeous rendition of the song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very beautiful, soft, quiet acoustic version. And the scenery obviously is gorgeous. It's a very lavish wedding spectacle. But yeah, I just, you know, tears were streaming. So shame on you, Crazy Rich Asians, the film, for making me cry because you had my grandma's song in it unexpectedly.
Spencer.
Yeah, this movie passed for me. I will give it a 5 out of 5. I thought it was pretty phenomenal. It did not make me cry, so it didn't have that penalty against it.
But, like, no, I know, it's kind of not fair to penalize the movie, but still.
You I didn't want to cry. You lose a point.
No, but this is definitely a movie that everyone should go see.
Yeah. Laura, does it pass or fail on how many monocles?
It's 10 out of 5.
Oh, yeah. She's taking somebody else's monocles, guys.
It deserves it. It's it it touches so many emotional stuff, and it brought it, honestly, like, it's great to see the rom-com genre come back, because like after that, like, everyone's craving the innocence of rom-coms and not more any more of that like raunchy stuff that you see. And it, I mean, people still want that, but, and we still have it, but it's great to see some normal rom-coms, and it's great to see Asian people normalized in them.
Yeah, no doubt. And for me, the film also passes, one of the things that we didn't get a chance to touch on, but the soundtrack to this film was really interesting, because all the songs were covers of popular songs that were American,
yeah,
born British songs. Or British.
I mean, Coldplay is a British band, but... Yeah.
But they're all covered in Chinese. And interestingly enough, the only English-speaking song was the song that Chad was talking about, Can't Help Falling in Love. And I thought that was really unique. I thought that was very interesting of a choice to make as a filmmaker. I don't know what the significance was of that particular thing, but maybe that'll be revealed later down the road. In terms of monocles, I do give the film a 4.5 out of 5. I thought the film did a great job of doing proper to the Asian American, or the westernized Asian representation in cinema and in film, and in terms of allowing not only the Asian community to have a film they can connect with, but also giving several different demographics of people an opportunity to connect with what is clearly a world-class type of film done by an all-Asian cast. So the film is a 4.5 out of 5.
Yep, that's what you said.
And yeah. So, but that about wraps up another episode of The Film Philosophers. Again, let us know what you think. The film has been out in theaters for some time, so make sure to go check it out. And if you see it, let us know what you thought on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers or on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we want to keep this conversation going. This is one of those types of films where the conversation that's created out of it is not one that should kind of dissipate. Keep it going, keep talking, and see what else the future holds for the proper representation of Asian Americans and westernized Asians in film. This was a great review. It was a great conversation. Just to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases, we got Kin, which I believe is the film about the little boy who finds a gun. That's what I got out of the trailer.
That's the synopsis?
Pretty much. That's all what I found. Operation Finale, which actually looks good, with Oscar Isaac, and The Little Stranger. So if you get a chance, check out any of those four films, including, like we said, Crazy Rich Asians, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. We want to thank Laura. Laura, thank you for taking the time out today and joining us on the show. Laura, where can people find you?
I am constantly on Twitter. So I'm always on there. So I'm on Twitter at lsirikul, L-S-I-R-I-K-U-L. You can always chat with me, and I'm always willing to chat about movies and Asian stuff.
Great. Well, like I said, this was a great episode. This was a great conversation, and we hope that this episode continues, like I said, the conversation out there with you guys and you listeners, and yeah. So, from all of us here at The Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.